I kind of struggle to choose this film
Okay.
because I feel like it's a very white movie, right? First of all, let me just get that out. Let me just say this movie is very, very white. It's set in Seattle. The whole cast is white. There's like the school principal is a black guy who has kind of a funny moment. And then there's a woman in the nursing home, a black woman. But other than that, lily white.
Welcome back to Open Form. I'm Michael Denzel Smith. Legendary underachiever Lloyd Dobler is in love with the classic overachiever Diane Court. Not that Diane would ever notice. She spent hardly any time with her graduating high school class socially, devoting all of her extra time to padding her resume in pursuit of a prestigious fellowship. So when Lloyd calls her up one day and asks her out, she initially rejects him, too busy. But his persistence wins the day, beginning a summer of romance and self-discovery befitting two teenagers. This week's film is Say Anything, and it was chosen by Donnie Walton, author of the novel The Final Revival of Opal and Nev, winner of the Aspen Words Literary Prize.
But I chose this movie because, as you said, it came out in 1989. I probably saw it maybe in 1990, basically when it was on HBO. And we had like at home the free HBO weekend or whatever that they used to do, right? Because we never had HBO regularly. But I watched it at home with my mother. I was about 15 years old in 1990. And I'm realizing now that I am older than my mother was when we watched that movie together. And every time I see this movie, two things happen. Like, first, I remember how swoony it made me feel at age 15. And then when I look at it at age 46, I'm like, yeah, this is a, such a sweet film and such a sweet movie, but I see red flags. I don't know that Lloyd and Diane are gonna last, but wow, this reminds me of what I used to dream about, what I thought like, you know, a teenage boy could be, you know? So I love that kind of that 15-year-old understanding that I have on top of this 46-year-old understanding that I have of this movie. And I just, it's probably the movie that if I see it on TV, I'll stop and like wherever it is, especially if it's in the party scene, which I think is like my favorite scene from a movie. I will watch it to the end. And I just like know so many lines. And, you know, my husband, who is also like probably the second biggest Black Say Anything fan that exists in the world, also loves this film. And we like set up our Wi-Fi networks to be named after like little references from the movie. And we have Lloyd holding the boombox as a figurine. So it's just a very, you know, I love teen romances. And for me, this was a teen romance, but like a little bit elevated. You know, there's a little bit more going on, especially with the Diane Court character. And also the Lloyd character is very iconic to me, very iconic feeling in a way. I'm about to teach a class for the first time about larger than life characters and how you develop them. And I've always sort of considered Lloyd Dobler to be a character like that. And I'm trying to figure out why. And I read this great little essay about characterization, and the writer and teacher Matthew Salices has a book called Craft in the Real World, Craft in the Real World, which is really brilliant. But he talks about character really lying in the difference between one person and another, right? And that's where you get like the essence of the character. And I was thinking about how different Lloyd was at the time from the other teenage male romantic leads. Like, he's kind of funny looking, he's gangly, he's tall, but most of all, he is incredibly open and vulnerable about his feelings for this girl, his infatuation with this girl who is not only pretty, but brilliant and ambitious and going places, and he admires her and he respects her. And yet the way he courts her was a way that was identifiable to me, that I recognized. And so those two things together, like I was just, I was crazy about this movie when I first saw it. And for until today, I'm crazy about it.
Okay. Oh, man. So can I admit something to you?
Yes. Yes.
Like, everyone's seen the image of Lloyd holding the boombox. And so and this has come up so much with my guests recently, is that I have that image in my head and therefore have felt like, oh, I've seen Say Anything, right?
Yeah.
But I hadn't. And it's so much, it's such a different movie from what I was expecting or what I like sort of had in my mind. And Lloyd is that kind of character that you're describing, and so different, exactly what you're saying, from like male romantic leads, particularly in teen films.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like normally there's sort of like some big change that needs to happen to the young romantic lead male in a teen film for him to like embrace love and the idea of love and fall in love, and he's got to get over the chasing of the girls or something like that, or he's so popular, or he's a just straight up loser who no one likes.
Right.
Got to grow into something that like understands like the way that women work and all of this, that like those are sort of the archetypes. And Lloyd, he says from the outset, he's like, look, I'm in love basically, and I want to get hurt. Like, yeah. I want to feel what love is with Diane Court. Like, there's nothing else in this world. And he also, you know, there's the scene where he's been broken up with Diane, and he's like, I need to find more male friends. And a group of men that he like, the group of young men that he comes to are all what we would now classify as just like embroiled in their toxic masculinity.
Completely toxic. I mean, let's just say Jeremy Piven is in a part of like this group of guys that just talk a lot of shit at the gas and sip, right?
Yeah.
And it's this glimpse of something that as an adult, like I kind of recognized after encountering kind of toxicity in men, is this lashing out, this kind of like hurt that they you know, put on other people after they've had their heart broken, you know. And so you get like a glimpse of Lloyd like trying to do that, and it's just not him. It's just not the character. This is a character whose best friends are girls, because they're the ones who he can really like talk with, you know. And I just found that to be really refreshing in a character, in a romantic lead.
And you think about him in contrast to, you mentioned the Jeremy Piven characters there and like all of these guys who are heartbroken. There's the one in particular, Joe, who's responsible for Lloyd's best friend Corey's like heartbreak and her suicide attempt. And he like is like, he's responsible for it because of his own ways and his deception of Corey and all of this, but still sitting there alone, right? Like, or without romantic prospect there because of his own actions, but still can't wrap his mind around it, right?
Such a loser.
Like, just such a loser.
A loser, and such presented very obviously as such in that scene.
Lloyd longs for that love and longs for it. But there is also part of me watching this, and it's not to say like I don't believe in the idea of teenagers being able to feel this depth of love, right? Like, we've all been there as teenagers, really believing in what we're feeling. But there was part of me watching it and just like, do they not understand the concept of a summer fling? Like, do they...
Well, and this is like, you know, the boombox scene, right? This is the iconic moment from the movie, the thing that most people probably like hold closest to their hearts. When I watch that now, I'm like, okay, like, you're doing a lot right now. You should maybe kind of like leave this girl alone and like try to like heal from your broken heart. But yeah, I totally, yeah.
But then I think about it and I'm like, okay, maybe they don't understand the concept of a summer fling, but part of it, it goes back to what Lloyd says in the beginning. He's like, I want to get hurt, like, or, you know, and that what he's saying is there's an understanding that, like, love comes with that other side, right? Like, right. That it can break you, that it's going to, there's an inevitability to it. And he's fully embracing every aspect of it. Now, does he go a little far with, like, bothering Diane when she's got her own stuff going on? Like, she has a lot going on.
Yeah.
And maybe she doesn't want to be thinking about you. But what Lloyd is sort of saying is, like, look, I understand. And I also want to be a part of that. Like, I want to embrace every bit of you. And it's, and to be different from, like, other teen rom-coms in this way that, like, it feels like in most of them, there's a sheen that like where that everyone's falling in love with. But Lloyd is saying, like, no, I understand that there's not going to be just the pretty parts of this. And I want to be a part of all of it.
Absolutely. And I think, like, to your point, you know, one movie that I often compare this to is another favorite of mine for different reasons, but Pretty in Pink. Have you seen Pretty in Pink?
Yeah.
So, okay. So you have the Molly Ringwald character and you have the Andrew McCarthy character. You know, she's sort of like, you know, poor girl from the wrong side of the tracks. He's like rich asshole, whatever. And the way that he courts her is so smooth, but, like, in a really unbelievable way. Like, he kind of hacks into the library computer system, yeah. And he's created some kind of weird chat thing that puts her picture next to his picture. And it's just like, what is this? You know, like, it's cool when you see it. Yeah, it's cool when you see it, but it's like, this is not real. This is not, like, with Lloyd, he gets up his courage and he just decides he's going to call her. Like, he picks up the phone, the same phone my mama had with the push buttons, drags it to the bathroom with that long ass tangled cord. And he just calls her and asks her out. And, like, all the gestures are romantic, but small enough to believe that this person could actually exist. And once you believe that this person can exist, you maybe also dream that a young man could be this open and, like, evolved about the idea that love also includes some amount of, you know, making yourself vulnerable to hurt, to pain. And so that's, like, really why it works so much for me.
Yeah. And then you have Diane on the other side of all of this, yeah, who's going through so much. And I think, like, at the heart of her story is the opening herself up to the idea of trusting in a time when, like, that is being tested for her, right? Like, so she has trusted and believed in her father, who's, as we see in the beginning, like, the most supportive, like, I'm like, the way that he's dealing with her in the beginning of the film, I'm like, I missed out on that.
Like, I know, like, who had that, you know?
Who had that? It's so incredibly loving and supportive. And I think that that's the only person that she seems to have trusted. And then she sort of closed herself off to the rest of the world. She's, like, going to that big party with Lloyd on their first date, and, like, none of her classmates know her, like, signing her yearbook, like, I wish I could have gotten a chance to know you kind of thing. And she's opening herself up to the idea that there are other people in the world to trust, at the same time realizing that she shouldn't have been trusting her father. Her father's been lying to her. He's been running a scam with this, you know, nursing home that he's
running
and stealing these people's money, and the relationship between the two of them is such that, like, she tells him everything and is believing that he also tells her everything. And then there's this Lloyd character who's equally sweet and, like, lovable and, like, showing all of that interest in her. And it's kind of like, well, should I trust you?
Yeah. And he's similarly putting her on a pedestal, which for me, like, with my old lady glasses, when I watch this movie, I'm like, maybe this is a red flag. Like, maybe, And I always, you know, when I was 15, I thought, oh God, a love for the ages. Like once the seatbelt sign goes off at the end, which is like the ending kind of graduate style ending of the movie, that they'll be happily ever after. But with my old lady glasses, I'm like, no, this is actually a summer fling and they're probably breaking up after like a month in England, because there's another scene where Diane goes back to Lloyd after she's broken up with him and she discovers her daddy's trash, like can't trust him. And she goes to Lloyd in his kickboxing gym where he's, you know, in a fight. And he sees her and then gets knocked out or whatever. And there's a scene where she's like, basically, I want to get back together. And he asks her this question that kind of haunts me. And he says, you know, are you here because you need somebody? Or are you here because you need me? And she doesn't answer like at first, because he just says, I don't care. Like, I'm just happy you're here.
Yeah.
And then she says, I need you. I need you. But I struggle to believe her in that moment just because, you know, it is also such a really vulnerable time for Diane. Like, in a sense, her whole family life is falling apart. And she hasn't really made a lot of friends. And so she has this young man who is practically like kind of worshiping her in a way and wants to follow her and be there for her. And he's made his whole mission to support her. And it's, of course, it's attractive to her, but once you get to England, what y'all going to talk about? You know,
I don't know
what y'all going to talk about. It's probably going to irritate Diane that, you know, Lloyd doesn't have direction. And when they break up, you know, I worry that Lloyd will be that toxic guy at the Gas and Sip, like full of resentment and kind of, so that's kind of like the thing that like I think about past that seatbelt sign going off at the end, like what becomes of them. And I feel like at some point there was talk about a sequel to this movie, which I think is a terrible idea. This movie should never have a sequel, because it's just about this really beautiful, special summer, you know, where these two people, you know, kind of find each other and find what they need in each other in this very beautiful, compressed amount of time, and kind of like, you know, let them go off into the sunset, like at the end, and let's not return to it, because then that's when it becomes like not believable.
It's not believable. And I think I worried on both of their ends, right? And I think it's a lot of what you're saying. And like, I don't think that this can hold past them going to England together, because you're just talking about like Lloyd is directionless, right? Like he's just sort of like, I don't know. I don't actually know what I want to do with my life. And what he's then decided, he tells Diane's father, is like, I'm going to make my job like being with Diane, right? Like that is the summation of his life.
Right. And it's like, if you're Diane's parent, like, excuse me, what? Like,
For him to not think of anything outside of Diane and his relationship to her means that like there's going to be something unfulfilled in him, just
absolutely,
like he's just not, there's not going to be, and also it's going to wear on her. She's going like I think part of Diane's issue here is that she is moving from man to man, right? Like it's her father and then a romantic interest, but she's never going to be in a position of one not being on that pedestal, right? Like the only treatment that she'll know from anyone is to be like the center of their world. And so there's something that's going to warp in her, but not just that, it's that she doesn't get to stand on her own ever. She doesn't get to experience that freedom of like discovery outside of the love that these men are like doting on her and like caring for her everything, right? So it's the father's provided that for some time. Now she's got Lloyd. There's no sense of Diane being able to get a moment to figure out who am I actually? Like, my father structured my life all of this time to like reach this goal, and now Lloyd is going to step in and provide all of the love that I've become accustomed to, and yet there's no space for Diane.
Right. Yeah. And it's a problem. It's a problem. Yeah. It's a problem. Great for a summer.
Great for a summer. Sure.
Ideal for a summer. Sure. Wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. But, you know, it's the England part.
Yeah.
That it's like, yeah, I don't know about this. It's a lot of expectation on her. It's a lot of like being stymied from, you know, experimenting with who you are. Like, maybe she wants to be a different person than like the girl who puts on that white dress with the flower in her hair at the party. You know what I mean? Like, maybe, you know, it's just, yeah, it's concerning. And then for Lloyd, you're absolutely right. Kickboxing is not going to be the wave for very long. Like, I have seen past 1989 and I know it's not the wave. So what are you going to do, my guy? You know, like what makes you passionate other than Diane?
Yeah.
So if I'm Lloyd's parent, I'm worried by that statement as well.
Yeah.
That he's going to make he's going to order his life around Diane.
And I think too, it just sort of, in a way, it very much speaks to the era and then like how much things have changed in that, like, I don't think that we're making this movie in 2020 or 2022, what have you, with 19-year-olds at the center of it, right? Because I don't think 19-year-olds are making these kinds of decisions and believing in the idea that, like, that in a sense that they have to make that decision at 19, that like they're cementing who they are, who they want to be with at 19, the way that like there's previous generations that did make those decisions so early. And like, it's just such a cultural shift of when adulthood truly begins.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You definitely could not make this movie now. It would just like,
for a number of other reasons.
Yeah. But, right.
Like, that sort of cultural shift feels like it's something that within the past decade or two has taken place, where it's like, no, adulthood is not 19. You don't make those sort of concrete decisions about this type of stuff and that leave us believing like, oh yeah, they live happily ever after. It's like, no, at 19 they probably, in our age, they probably do just break up at the end of that summer like live their lives.
And I don't think there's the expectation either from adults, like there seemed to be from Diane's father, that he would have it all figured out. I mean, I'm thinking about that scene where, you know, that it's sort of like a famous monologue. He doesn't want to buy anything, sold or process or sell anything, bought and process, like that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I think that's totally acceptable now. And I think that like, it doesn't necessarily mean that you order your life around your love interests, but it's like you do things to explore what it is that you do want to do, or that will make you happy. Yeah.
Donnie, what's one lasting image that sticks with you from Say Anything?
I will say, it's the last kind of very uncomfortable few moments of the film. And I've referenced it already in our conversation. But they're on the plane, they're on the way to England, and Diane is afraid to fly, is the whole backstory of this. And he's telling her that everything's gonna be okay as soon as the seatbelt sign goes off. And so it's a scene of them looking up, waiting for the seatbelt sign to go off. And there's kind of this look of uncertainty on their faces. And then the movie just goes to black. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, that moment, as I said, is probably part of why I chose this film, is because of, you know, what you think perhaps happens on the other side of that. Mm-hmm. I think it's very like provocative to think about. And it's similar to The Graduate. I think it's sort of a take on The Graduate ending, kind of like, what have we done kind of moment. So I think, you know, like, definitely that moment. And of course, I mean, I'm human, like the boombox scene, you know, like that is very much sort of the look on John Cusack kills this role, I just have to say. Like, the sort of look on his face as he's holding that boombox up was just like fantastic. Yeah. And I meant to say, there's one more thing I wanted to say about why I chose this movie. So a lot of people say that Almost Famous is Cameron Crowe's great music movie, but I'm going to say there's an argument for Say Anything also being a great music movie, and not just because of what's on the soundtrack. Like, I'm not a big fan of a lot of that music, only in the context of this movie, but because of sort of the very naturalistic way that music is woven into the story, and the way that you see the characters experiencing music in a very relatable teenage everyday way. So there's the moment where on their first date, Diane gets into Lloyd's big Malibu and he cranks the engine and the music is blaring because like the radio is coming on and he rushes to turn it down. Or like when he's putting a fixing the tape deck, which is broken, by like stuffing some paper in there to get it to like connect. Or the way that Corey, who's played by Lily Taylor, is sort of working out her pain and angst through like writing these songs. And I remember going through my first heartbreak and writing pages and pages of terrible poetry.
Same.
And so that all, just the way that the character has always got her guitar and is sort of strumming as she's talking to the characters, all of that felt very real. And, you know, in Pretty in Pink, there's scenes where they go to like a club and there's a concert, and that is all like very big, but this is just like small moments, you know, Lloyd wearing a Fishbone t-shirt or a Clash t-shirt, like those things I just love.
Donnie, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Michael. This is fun.
Thanks for listening to Open Form, a podcast from Lit Hub Radio, produced by Eliza Smith and Justin Alvarez, and hosted by me, Michael Denzel Smith. Feel free to like, comment, subscribe to Open Form wherever you get your podcasts, and or sign up for the Lit Hub newsletter to stay up to date on our latest episodes. If you're enjoying what you hear, share Open Form with a friend or on social media. Next week, somehow, it just starts raining frogs.